If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine light and love of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening our seminar topic is The Seeker's Odyssey, Ways We Seek and Find and Fulfill Life's Purpose. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and inhabit your own odyssey. Let your own spiritual quest inhabit you. Because that which quests is the divine within you, seeking to inhabit, seeking to occupy, seeking to source through every single quark of your being. So take another deep breath and allow the fullness of your Atmic spirit to inhabit your conscious self. Allow every part of your body, every part of your mind, all of your nervous system, all of your senses to be filled with the divine light and love and power and creativity of the One Supreme Source. See yourself as an extension of that divine purpose into time space, not just in this localized identity that you assume as your singular point in time space and identification. Try to see yourself holographically dwelling within every atom of creation. See yourself inhabiting the light in every single speck of existence. Expand, expand, expand your sense of identity until there's nowhere that you are not. For that is the truth. Everything else is something limitation has invented. That part of the mind that sees everything in a point of limitation, confined in time, space. That is what we want to break free of. For in the breaking free of that shell of self-definition, you will find your omnipresent self. And that is the freedom we all seek. So again, connect with that part of you that's on a seeking path, on the odyssey of a seeker. And let's examine the ways that we seek and find and fulfill life's purpose. Whether we're conscious or not, we are all on a search for our purpose in life and the meaning behind our being here. What's it all about? Is it random, evolutionary, divinely designed and directed? What? Does life, my life, any life, have meaning beyond this physical existence? Where is it all headed? Does it at some point cease to exist? Will I cease to exist? Bottom line, what is my ultimate destiny? Where was I before I was born? And where will I be after I die? Is there a before and an after? What is birth? What is death? What gives rise to these? So our spiritual odyssey as a seeker begins with our quest to find the answers to one or more of these questions. What started you on your quest? Was it a book? Something you saw online? Something someone posted on social media? Tweeted? Was it in a film? On TV? Through someone you met? Or someone who impressed you? Or was it some epiphany? Or an inner knowing that dawned suddenly in your mind? Or did you have a mystical experience, a near-death experience, an out-of-body experience, an episode of missing time in which you come back as a new person? What was it for you? Think back and see if you can connect those diamond point moments of spiritual prompting and awakening. And where are you in your odyssey? Are you still seeking? Are you in the cycle of finding and realizing? Or are you in the cycle of fulfilling and fulfillment? So, I was thinking back of how I got started on my odyssey. But bear in mind, I incarnated very rapidly. I think I had 13 years between this incarnation and my previous incarnation. As a young Brahmin disciple, a boy, with Shirdi Sai Baba, the previous avatar of Satya Sai Baba, previous incarnation. And that was the third in a series of being a guru, presumably at some level of enlightenment, because I came in and the first realization that I had was that I was God. I don't know how a child would have that strange awareness dawn on them unless they had carried it over from a state of being a yogi. Because people in the West don't think like that. People in the East commonly do, at least those who are on a conscious yogic path. You're taught in the Vedas that you are divine, you're one with God. So that came in with me at childhood. But there was no one awake, no one I could talk to, and I was put in a Catholic convent boarding school. But the first impression I had was of two very pure, sweet nuns. One, my first grade teacher, Sister Mary Angelus, and the home, the nun that was the in charge of the dormitory that I slept in. And both of them were pure devotees of the Lord. Their faces were radiant with devotion. And they greatly imprinted my young heart with a desire myself to enter the convent and become a nun. Well, my parents would have none of that, so they whisked me out of out of the convent as soon as I voiced that I wanted to become a nun. But while I was there, I became fascinated with the lives of the saints. And since that was about the only reading material that we had there, had access to, I would read all of the lives of the saints. And so very early on, I had the desire to model my life after that of the saints. And I remember talking to Jesus in my mind, and sometimes I would write him letters, and then I would make airplane shapes out of them and toss them out the window because I believed that the winds would carry my message to Jesus, who presumably was in heaven, right? But another thing I realized when I was in the convent, that the people that I thought had actual knowledge of God really didn't. They had faith, they had devotion, they had studied the scriptures, they had memorized the writings of others. But I realized at a very young age that they did not know directly. They had not had actual direct experience. And again, I don't know how I knew that. I just did. So anyway, there are many things that happened to me. My mother, for one, was given a month to live. She was dying of polycystic kidney failure. And my parents separated at a young age. So that would have meant I was going to be entirely alone. So I prayed to God. I asked Jesus to heal my mother. And I gave him my life to serve him all the days of my life. And my mother was miraculously healed. But I consecrated myself to know, love, serve God, and to help people awaken to their connection with the divine. In fact, when I asked Jesus, "What do you want me to do?" he said, "Help people find God. Help people find God." And so that's what I started doing. So I actually began teaching and counseling at the age of 8. I can remember sitting on the bed and teaching whoever would sit still long enough how to say the rosary, how to pray. I would tell them to have faith in God, you know, much the same as I do today. I'm still doing basically the same thing, encouraging people to have trust and faith and to surrender to the divine and to live connected consciously to the divine. And then through a series of different events, I was led from one teacher to another. I was led to my first Ashtar Command teacher, who told me I was from the Ashtar Command, who said I was from Venus, and who said I had come to work with her in this incarnation, which I did for 3 years until she passed on. During that time, I was put on a course of study. There were 10 of us in training by the Ashtar Command to be teachers, and I was one of them. And we had all been connected in one way or another to Pharaoh Akhenaten and Nefertiti. And I found out that I had been one of the daughters of Nefertiti, the fourth-born one. And my first Ashtar Command teacher had been Merhtaten, the firstborn. So she was like a mother to me in that lifetime, and kind of like a mother to me in this lifetime. And the Ashtar Command put us on a series of studies, which if you went to a university to learn those same things, you would have had a PhD. It was such an extensive and thorough and all-encompassing series of books that gave you information on everything, body, mind, spirit, soul, the different civilizations, everything from Lemuria and Atlantis, through Greece and Rome and Egypt, and all of the different civilizations, all of the colonizations of the different extraterrestrial races, all of these things. And this was in the early 60s when nobody was awake. We were like freaks because we wore long gowns of the different colors of the rays, and we wore beautiful golden brocade capes with a high neck, and we looked like we had stepped off the ship somewhere. And we had a strange little store in Las Vegas that was called the Station of Cosmic Light. And in it, we sold everything that was good for the body, mind, and spirit. But we also had things in our window that said things like this: Jesus is from Venus. He came to Earth in a spaceship. You get the picture? This was a very, very unusual store on the corner of Fremont Street in Las Vegas. And we were a group of people that had a cosmic message at a time when nobody was doing that. We had books, spiritual books. We had museum artifacts. We had health foods. We had massage lounging chairs. We had beautiful jewelry from the different civilizations. We had beautiful gift items. And I was the store buyer and also the decorator of the windows. And also, I was the manager. So I was trained to teach by mentoring students as they would come in and want to study whatever it was that we taught. And that's how the Ashtar Command taught me. In fact, one of my students to this day is in the movement of spiritual inner awareness. And she was the first student that I taught. And all these years, here we are in the same spiritual group again. So I wanted to share that as a way of telling you how along your path you will be led to what you need at the time to facilitate your awakening. If you're like myself, a soul here on a mission that has been sent into this time-space continuum to be a teacher or to serve in some way, they will find you. My teacher was sent to find me by the Ashtar Command when it was time for me to awaken. She was led right to where I was. She sent out the telepathic call, which I got on some level. And a week later, I walked into her strange little store and pretty much shook from head to toe when I saw her the first time, because I sort of knew her. I recognized her. And it was very impactful. And of course, then I was led to my guru, Sai Baba, who led me to my Western plane teacher, my Western teacher, John Roger. And I was led to teach esoterically by studying and being encountered by Torquem Seredarian, who is a great master teacher that the Master Moria had guided to find me and to get me started as a teacher. Because sometimes you think you're a student, you don't realize you're a teacher, or you have a sense you're a teacher, but you don't quite know how to get started. So that was my dilemma. When I started coming to Torquem Seredarian's classes, he had the Aquarian Educational Foundation, which was Alice Bailey, Blavatsky, and Agni Yoga based in terms of lineage. And he said, "What are you doing sitting in class? Don't you know you're a teacher?" And I said, "Well, yes, I have a sense I am, but I don't know how to get started." And he said, "No problem, I'll show you." Anyway, that's a long story. But just to let you know that you are never ignored. There's a whole group of your cheering team, let's call it that, that you've known in other lifetimes. Some of them have been in incarnation with you. Some of them are out of incarnation now. Some of them are family. Some of them are of the spiritual brotherhoods. But they all know the disciples of the light. And they find each one of us when it's our time to come online with our mission and to come online with our spiritual odyssey. So, where do you find yourself in this equation? And it would be a fun exercise for you, maybe, perhaps, if you want it to be, to notice how you got to where you are today. Notice the progression. And another interesting thing is, notice the lineage, because everyone that I encountered was connected to the same master lineages, the same teachers, the same line of command, if you will, so that there wasn't a difference in those that contacted me. I could see the relationship. I could see where I belonged in terms of that discipline, that lineage. So, if you are seeking, do you know specifically what you wish to find? What is it that you are seeking to experience, to attain? And if not, if you're clueless, then your task would be to do some deep self-examination and to pinpoint exactly what you are in search of. And then to get on a tried and proven path toward that attainment. It's important to be on a path where others have achieved self-realization or God-realization, if that is what you're seeking, or if they have achieved proficiency in whatever it is they're seeking. I'm taking a spiritual look at it here, but you can apply it to also mundane goals that you may have as well. You've got to be mentored by someone who knows the steps of progression and can keep you on track, and who also makes sure that you reach and attain your goal. So nearly every seeker will be led to a way-shower and guide who has attained what you're seeking to attain. And usually a series of teachers and guides will appear along the way to make sure you stay on track. Because I found that the entire universe rejoices in our awakening and conspires to assist along the way that we've chosen. So you get to decide when you want to begin your search in earnest and to begin your odyssey. And once you're clear, what it is you wish to actually discover. So, the ways that one may get going on this search can be quite dramatic and quite traumatic, because they have to jolt us out of humdrum animal-human complacency. And I say animal-human because the physical body has evolved out of the animal kingdom, even as the soul comes down as an extension of the divine. But a person doesn't move from the animal state of consciousness until they actually make contact with that divine part of themselves. And then you can say they've become truly human, because for the first time they begin to live for something more than eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, what should be the purely animal level of existence. So something will get your attention to wake you up. Most require some breaking point, physically, emotionally, mentally, a loss, an accident, an out-of-body experience, a near-death experience, missing time episode. I had so many of those myself. I had a lot of emotional loss, heartbreak, romantic trauma, a lot of physical illness, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and missing time. I was beamed up on a ship with 3 hours and 45 minutes of missing time. At a time when I was desperate to go beyond the confines of my life at that time, and I really didn't know how. Sometimes it's an addictive pattern, an illness, but there will be some pattern interrupt to jolt you out of your egoic trance. So I want to look at something rather arcane. Because it contains a lot of keys. And it's something I've touched on before, and I want to touch on it again tonight. And that is, one state of consciousness reveals the world one sees. So each shift to another level of consciousness causes a shift in how one sees, interprets what one sees, and the general level of understanding. So one state of consciousness determines the world view that we hold for as long as we are in that state of consciousness. So you might say that the world that we see outwardly is representative of the collective level of consciousness that the masses of humanity globally maintain. Now, we who are the disciples, initiates, light workers, we are a vanguard of a higher level of consciousness. We're not supposed to be part of the consensus mass consciousness as is portrayed on the evening local news or even the global news. That represents more the karmic field that souls are dealing with. But it's not representative of the consciousness that we've come to import and to embody and to be present in our, you know, our present lives. We're supposed to embody, to show and tell a higher way of being, of understanding. So every outer shift in awareness begins with an inner shift to a new level of consciousness. If there's no shift in the inner, in the collective inner consciousness, there can't be a shift in the outer. Everything depends on that inner shift first. So each initiation results in an expansion of one's conscious awareness. The field, the operative field in which you operate and move and express is representative of the level of light initiation that you've managed to move into and activate. But the initiatory activation that you receive, that expansion of awareness, is permanent. That's how you can tell it's real, is that it makes a permanent, very obvious shift in the way you see things and the way you feel about things. So this causes one to view, have a much broader perspective. So initiation is like the gradual turning up of a dimmer switch in our brain, within our nervous system, and within our very cellular structure, so that it can now gradually contain and communicate more light, more love, more awareness, more creative power through the body-mind instrument. Bottom line, we are preparing a home, a multidimensional home, for the divine spirit to fully inhabit and operate through, even upon earth, as it is in the higher non-physical realms. And that is the fulfillment of the prayer that Jesus taught us, that it could be on earth as it is in heaven. So the Supreme Creator created human as the heavenly, universal, all-knowing, divine manifester, to embody and commutate loving wisdom and creative intelligence throughout the omniverses. So we are morphing into God, operating through a collective. The human kingdom in its entirety. And so we're emerging as a new creation for a new day, a new epoch, a new cycle of manifestation, or Manvantara, as it's called esoterically. So all the previous development up until now has been preparatory. This development for at least the last 18.5 million years on this planet alone, for the emergence of this new galactic Christ race. To enter this state requires releasing our sense of being a time-defined and limited, localized entity. The experiences of aging, dis-ease, and death are all caused by identification with time and material form. Both bodily identification and the sense of time arise solely out of the third-dimensional mind, the egoic mind, and the limited brain function. And yet we know that we are expanded beyond the third-dimensional capsule of reality. And the formerly limited brain is becoming crystalline, and both of the lobes formerly separated will marry into one cohesive unit. And that's taking place even as we speak. So the authentic self is timeless and formless, ever expanding in its potentiality, awareness, and creative outreach. This is a great mystery because what we're moving into is aligned with that which never changes. And yet, as I've been meditating and being shown more and more, it's being revealed to me that creation proceeds, but not by the mind. Beyond the unification of the all that is, when we become fully God conscious, when we move into that and can function in it, we create from bliss. And that's something that we're all going to have the delight of awakening to as we move into those levels. So mind entrapped in localized identity is bound by time. And time-bound identity is but another description of ego or the false self. Time arises when you have a sense of localized identity. I'm here, sitting in this chair, in this room, and the time is whatever it is. That's how most of us identify. Very few of us have a sense of what it would be to be omnipresent, to expand our awareness until there's nowhere we're not. And we can step in and out of time by choice according to the need as we go forth to do God's work within His many mansions, its many mansions, because God is non-gender. The soul is non-gender. We are non-gender defined. So bottom line, awareness sets us free into timeless, non-localized presence. You're present, but you're not limited. And that is what one experiences in deep meditation, also in deep concentration. To concentrate means to bring your full attention to one point of focus. And in that and all altered states of consciousness, body, thought, and time are transcended. Pay attention to that. Every time you feel absolutely one with a transcendental state, you will not have a sense of bodily awareness. You will have transcended thinking, and you'll have no registration of the passage of time. That's how you can tell that you're in a transcendental state. Now, when you go into God consciousness, that state is permanent. But you don't lose the ability to utilize these other levels as you need them. Sai Baba was fully a cosmic consciousness. Some call him the cosmic Christ, but actually that limits him. He was beyond anything we could define, but he was fully God conscious. Although he could operate in the body as he needed to, he could think, he could speak all languages as he needed to, he could relate to every kind of person that would come to him, he could speak in the language of everyone. He didn't have to read them. He said he was in them. He dwelt within them as their divine spirit, one with their divine spirit. And of course, we know how he could transcend time. I've told you of many of the things that he did. He could extend time. He could collapse time. He could erase time. He could do anything with time. He was called Kalatidaya, master of time. So that's our seat too. Everything that he did is simply revealing the potentialities that we have that are waiting to be exercised, waiting to be discovered, moved into, and exercised. So see if you can follow me in some of this, because I awoke the other morning with these ideas floating through my mind. Obviously, I've been on the inner planes and really looking at this from a higher state of awareness. Bear in mind that you don't sleep. You leave your body every time you go to sleep, catnap, drift off, daydream. You are in another state of life, of consciousness, of dimension, and you are going on with your learning and your serving and your operating as a functionary of the divine. You're never not doing that. We have no moment in which we are not divine functionaries. So time arises with egoic localization of identity. Try to get a sense of that, because that is how people define themselves on Earth and how most of us live every single day of our life. And that's what keeps the same old in place with no shift of consciousness. We have to use those tools of meditation and other forms of getting beyond the sense of body, body consciousness, body limitation, body focus, and beyond the tyranny of time. So awareness sets one free into timeless, non-localized presence. Eckhart Tolle speaks about this all the time, and he has many nice keys that he can give to get you moving into spacious presence. So that inner spaciousness is freedom. Mental confinement is imprisonment, because the lower egoic mind and time are twins. So whether dwelling in a tent or a palace, one can experience opulence and freedom, or the opposite, because the mind alone decides which. How we see and interpret everything depends on our state of consciousness. That's why you can't follow and try to make sense out of all the different teachers, because every teacher teaches out of a level of awareness they've attained. That's why science keeps changing, because as the consciousness broadens and expands, new revelations appear that have been there all along, but could not be seen until there was a corresponding shift in the consciousness. As man shifts in his consciousness, so he's able to conquer certain things. For example, when man began to master the emotional nature more consciously, not that he's fully done it, but more consciously, he began also to master the water, as in ocean travel, as in aquatic sports. That runs side by side with mastering the watery element in the body, which would be the emotions. That was the Piscean age. Now we're moving into the age of Aquarius, the age of air. What do we have? We have air flight. We have travel, spaceships. We have the internet. These are all Aquarian. So when we begin to shift beyond simply being a planetary dwelling hominid, we will begin to have contact with beings who are beyond us, but also offer to us sort of the next step in our awareness. But it comes in with an inner shift of consciousness. And the last 200 and some years, you can see, we went from a Model T Ford to travel to the moon and Mars and Saturn and Jupiter and so forth. So you see how amazing that is? But that's the collective making that shift together. And individually, we have to shift inwardly ourselves to be aware of anything higher than the state of consciousness in which we presently are operating from. So the outer shifts with inner transformation alone. The one that has the power of transformation is you as a spirit, as a soul. Or you could say the Holy Spirit, the whole spirit. Or you could call it the Traveler, or the Mahanta, or the Christ. All of these represent the transcendental consciousness, that which is awake on all of the levels and has the ability to convey you through all those levels and help you step free through grace. It's the path of grace, which transcends the path of the law of karma. So an entirely new world of experiential reality arises with a single shift in awareness. But be aware, thoughts are very powerful creative things. And every thought creates form at some level. When you pass out of the physical body and you go up into the astral plane, what you're going to see are your own creations. The Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, both represent the archetypes of consciousness that are your own creations that you encounter. And if you don't see the divine in them, they turn into the wrathful deities. But they're simply manifestations of those parts of yourself that you've not yet owned and transformed to where you have a realization that that too am I. Tatwamasi, as they say in Sanskrit. That also am I. And when you can see that everything is but your own creation, and you can bless it, and fearlessly look at it without projecting otherness, separation, fear, whatever, when you can do that, suddenly it's transformed into the angels of light, into the beneficent deities, who then bless you and allow you to pass onward. So all of the heavens, purgatories, and hells are of our own creation. They reside nowhere but within our own minds, our own consciousness. Even the Pope said that recently. So everything that we see in the outer world started with a thought. Every transformation begins with a renewing of our mind and a change in the way we think. Dr. Wayne Dyer has very good books on how to work with the habitual patterns of thought. Deepak Chopra does as well. We have wonderful teachers on the planet today who give you many, many wonderful keys to how to work with these levels. Wherever you're stuck in your odyssey, there's a teacher out there that has some very good teachings, tools. And of course, the Course in Miracles was given by the Master Jesus to renew the mind and to train it to see and think as God sees, as God thinks. And we're told that God is in our mind as the very light of illumination itself. God is in our body as the very joy and bliss of life and love, vitality and health. God is in our emotions as peace and serenity. But most of all, God is experienced as a universal sense of loving kinship with all, where no one is omitted from your loving and your blessing. And we are told that our holiness blesses the world, and there's nothing our holiness cannot do. So as one believes and thinks, so the world appears to each person. That's why one person can be living in a visual hell, and another person can be sitting in bliss right next to them. They're living in their own, they're inhabiting the world of their own creation. One has created out of the mind, which would be the hell, and the other has created out of the awakened state. They have become aware that God lives in them, and wherever they are, God is. So one's belief system and thought patterns are what give rise to one's behavior. You can look at a person and how they behave, and you can pretty much tell if they're operating from the light of that higher illumined state or they're in the hell worlds of the bardos of the mind. And few people do anything other than react to the karmic momentums they set in motion at a previous time. Few indeed know how to think. And very few transcend thought into awareness. But you do, and you are, and you will. That's why I'm talking to you. These seminars are for the closet Christs, Every one of you is a Christ. But you have to exit the closet where you've been hiding, where you have not been able or empowered enough to step into owning your Christhood, your state of anointed awareness, your Messiahship. We are a collective Messiah. It takes all of us in the collective sonship to each awaken individually, but we don't awaken alone. As each person chooses back, Jesus said in the Course of Miracles that the entire world is transformed. It only takes one. That's why Jesus is called the Savior. But he did it, but we have to awaken to that within ourselves. Otherwise, we sit on a church pew and we say, well, he was the Son of God, but not me. And I love the quote by Jesus. He said in the Course of Miracles, if you want to be like me, I will help you, knowing that we are the same. But if you want to be different, I will wait until you change your mind. And you will change your mind. So Jesus didn't come to toot his own horn of greatness and say, look how great I am, and you're all a bunch of lost sinners. And no. Jesus came to release the anointing of your greatness and to reveal to you your unlimited divine potential and abilities. So you have to come out of the closet of whatever keeps you small, time-bound, localized in your sense of identity, entranced and hypnotically entrained in the folderol of the material world. You have to come out of that. You have to come out of the closet and allow yourself to be born the promised one. We are each the promised prince and princess of the kingdom of the Most High. We are each the anointed, the beloved, the one we've been waiting for. Christ walks with each one of us as a brother, as one who went the full pathway and attained oneness with the Father. And so he calls us to do the same. He calls us to transcend time, transcend mental and egoic definition, transcend anything that keeps you small. Any part of the mind that suggests you can't is not the part of the mind that's thinking with God. God is the light in which we see. God is the holiness by which we bless. And so release your life to be a blessing, that every place you put your holy feet, you have anchored the kingdom of heaven, so that indeed it is on earth as it is in heaven. You are the Christed ones of these days. You are the collective Messiah. And we go forth now as a collective Christ race, where we will experience together the birthing of universes yet to be out of the radiant bliss of our loved, filled, overflowing hearts. And I think that's something that really, underneath all of our other searches, we're really seeking to find that part that goes from glory to glory, revelation to revelation, that ever knows itself as one with the all that is. So I hope this has been helpful to you. You've been listening to Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command. Cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. And we'll go out chanting, beautiful chant, on I, you. Deep breath. On I, you. Blessings and grace to each one of you, and blessings and grace to all the beings in all the worlds. Namaste.